This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Daniel James.
100% correct. I am Daniel James. I'm going to be hosting The Conversation Hour this hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and ABC Victoria. I've got a stellar episode of The Conversation Hour lined up for you. But before we get into that, I just wanted to say I've been a fan of this radio station my entire life. Back to the days when it was called 3LO, and I've listened to all of the stalwarts that have come through here, and I've been fortunate enough to make friends with some of them. I guess it doesn't help that I'm a bit of an ABC Melbourne groupie. I'm always hanging around outside the building, waiting to, hopefully be picked up and put on air. But to be given the honour and the privilege of hosting this conversation during this week on these precious airways is a real tremendous honour. But that's enough of the schmaltz. Let's get on with the program. This week marks 50 years of NAIDOC Week, which is an amazing achievement. It is a grassroots-led, week of observance. I think observance is a really important word. The theme this year is 50 years of deadly. And I'll ask our various guests on the program today what deadly actually means to them, because it's not what if you look it up in a dictionary, it's not what we mean here. Let's just say that. So coming up in the hour, very shortly, I'm going to be speaking with Jaron Murray-Jackson, who is the co-chair of the First People's Assembly of Victoria, or Galang Wal. We'll speak to him about all the goings-on that he's been doing this NAIDOC week. He's been very, very, very busy. And then we'll be speaking to a couple of people that have been nominated for NAIDOC People of the Year, I think is the term. So Lynette Riley, AO, speak to her about what she's been up to. Dr. Lana Leslie Heffling, OAM, has been nominated for Person of the Year Award finalist. So a couple of finalists in that prestigious award. Timmy Duggan, OAM, founder of Hoops for Health, NAIDOC Person of the Year finalist as well. We're going to be going right across the country, but I also want to hear from you. What have you been doing this NAIDOC week? Where are you? Who have you been seeing? Have you been participating? Do you know what NAIDOC week is? But we want to know what you've been up to, where you've been, and how you're observing this important week to Aboriginal people right across the country. There are dozens of activities happening across this here beautiful state we call Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour with Daniel James.
Galang Wal is the new body created through Victoria's first treaty. Officially operating from the 1st of May 2026, not that long ago, it leads the strengthened relationship between First Peoples and the state and works with Victorian government on treaty reforms and practical outcomes. The structure includes the First Peoples Assembly, and then there are a couple of branches that sit underneath that that I'll be speaking to our first guest about, who is sitting opposite me, and he's very he's a good-looking rooster. I'll state that. It's not great radio, I understand that, but in studio with me now is Jaron Murray-Jackson, who's a Jar Jar Rung man and one of the new co-chairs of Galang Wal, the body created through Victoria's first treaty. Jaron, thanks for joining us. Happy NAIDOC.
No worries. Thanks for having me. And, yeah, happy NAIDOC to you too, brother.
How has NAIDOC week been for you this year, both personally and now that you find yourself in this new leadership role?
Yeah, it's been amazing, and I think it just added some extra specialty to it, being the co-chair of Galang Wal and actually getting out and about to everyone and anyone who wants to hear about how deadly NAIDOC is and how good Galang Wal is going, tracking along as well. So it's been amazing.
The theme for this year is 50 years of deadly. When you hear that phrase, what part of the story comes up first for you? Is it pride, protest, resistance, the future?
Yeah, it's probably a bit of a mixed bag, and, you know, I've experienced 32 years of that deadly myself, and I think back to when I was a younger fella when my mum and dad used to take me to the march on Friday, which I'm about to go to after this, and just being around our community and our elders and celebrating our culture and marching in the street is something that I'm really fond of, and, yeah, you know, it's it's NAIDOC's really important that we've been celebrating our culture. We kick it up a notch this week, but when you think about it, it stems from the day of mourning in 1938, where our elders fought for justice and against systematic racism, and my great-grandfather, Pastor Sir Doug Nichols, was part of that. So, yeah, it's a week that I hold pretty close to my heart.
We both have heritage that actually goes back to that exact day, that exact moment, which was the day of mourning, which was a protest held in Sydney on the 26th of January 1938, which was one of the springboards to where we are today, that got us through to the 67 referendum, and here in Victoria that got us through to the treaty process and eventually treaty. Just to go back to my opening, the theme this year is 50 years of deadly. What does the word deadly mean to you?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I feel like if you speak to anyone who's Aboriginal, they'll have a different meaning in it. But for me, I think it's, yeah, being proud of who you are and proud of your culture, not having shame in yourself. I feel like, you know, all the things that have happened over to us have been oppressed. We tend to speak down about ourselves. So when we speak about being deadly, it's about showing pride of who you are and your culture and your people.
You are now the co-chair with Mariki Onus of Gallanwal. A lot of people would have heard of the First Peoples Assembly. A lot of people listening would have heard about the treaty process. But Gallanwal is now a new thing, and it came into being on the 1st of May. What changed on the 1st of May when Gallanwal formally began operating?
Yeah, well, Gallanwal is Aboriginal democracy in action. It's self-determination in action, and it was birthed out of the first statewide treaty, which happened late last year, and that's something all Victorians should be very proud of. But pretty much what it is, it's just the assembly with expanded powers and capabilities, and there's going to be a couple other arms, so Ninga Nangawada, which is our accountability mechanism, so we can hold government accountable to their promises, and then Yono Yuruk Talkuna, which is our office of truth-telling, because our people need to keep telling their truth so they can heal through that process as well.
Yeah, we had the Yuruk Justice Commission, which was had the powers of a royal commission, sat for about 3 or 4 years and heard, you know, thousands of hours of testimony, went through tens of thousands of pages of written evidence, both historical and contemporary. Why is truth-telling and ongoing truth-telling such an important part of what Gallanwal is going to be doing?
It's so important. Australia and Victoria has a skeleton in its closet, and truth-telling brings it out into the open. I used to work in the operations at the Assembly from 2020 onwards to 2023 when I was first elected, and everywhere I went, when I yarned to community, they were saying, how can we have treaty without truth? So the first round of members took that on board, and they pushed for the first truth-telling commission process in this country. And it was a historic process, and the public record's out now, and there's 146 recommendations that are waiting to be implemented.
Let's talk about the truth of treaty and how long it's been in the works for. I mean, I think a lot of listeners would recognise that Bob Hawke, former Prime Minister, was promising a treaty with First Peoples back as late as, or long ago as 1988, I think it was. How did the path to treaty commence here?
Well, for generations we've been calling for treaty. We've been marching in the streets calling for it, and I think our old people saw the good that it did for mobs from overseas, New Zealand, Canada, America, and so on. But really, the process started in Victoria roughly 10 years ago, so probably in 2016. The government put on self-determination forums, and there was roughly 500 to 600 mob there, and they called for treaty. And so they took that on board, and they appointed Aunty Jill Gallagher as a treaty commissioner in 2018, I believe it was. And she had the job of going around the state and figuring out how we're going to go about this treaty business, and she did similar forums.
From absolute scratch
in a self-determined way, and she gathered all the feedback from our community. Then from there, in 2019, she came up with the idea of the First Peoples Assembly, which is a democratically elected body that was going to actually figure out the process for treaty negotiations. And from there, the first round of members made the treaty negotiation framework, the treaty authority, and the self-determination fund, all part of the architecture of treaty making. And then when I was elected in 2023, the second round of members negotiated the first treaty in this country. And like I said before, that's something all Victorians can be proud of. And now we're going into the treaty era with Gallanwal set up.
You're listening to Jaron Murray-Jackson on The Conversation Hour. We're getting some texts in what people are doing around the state. This one reads, hey there, on how people are acknowledging NAIDOC Week, our lovely Pilates instructor, Mary at Coburg Leisure Centre, did a playlist of First Nations artists for class yesterday. She spoke about each artist and matched the moves to the songs. It was only a small moment, but a really nice awareness raising one. I mean, that's kind of like what, I mean, we've always talked about Reconciliation Week, you know, within our community. It's kind of like been more of a sort of a corporate orientated week. But NAIDOC Week is really for us. It's always seemed that way. It's more sort of grassroots. What have you been up to this week? I mean, how many events have you been involved with?
I think I've lost count, but I've gone to a few. I've done a bit of everything, really. There was a state reception Wednesday night. That's where all of our leaders from Victoria go, and the state sort of put that on. That was all right. I went to an ally event in Baldwin. That was pretty deadly. Like, the allies get really excited during NAIDOC, and they love to hear about treaty. That was a deadly event. And and today I'm going to go to the NAIDOC march and speak on the steps of Parliament, which I'm really excited for. As someone who grown up and watch our Aboriginal leaders get up and speak, you know, Uncle Gary Foley and my father Gary Murray getting up there, and
both like a bit of a yarn.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm excited to carry on in their footsteps and see how I go.
Can we get a bit of a sneak peek, a bit of a snippet as to what you'll be talking about? I mean, first of all, co-chair of Gullingwold, what does Gullingwold actually mean again? What's the translation? What is the origin?
Yeah, it means tip in the spear in Gunai Kurnai language. And, yeah, it's really about setting up that foundation for our political power.
So what might you be saying to the hundreds, potentially thousands of people in about an hour or so?
I've got a few things in my head. I'm just going to see how I go. But I think for me it's speaking about how Gullingwold is a platform for our people to use now. And we need to think about what our future could look like with that platform. And to me it's, you know, more homes for our families, stronger organisations, businesses of our own, and wealth and prosperity for the future generations. And economic empowerment is something that this chamber is really passionate about, and that's something that we're going to strive for this term and deliver something within the next 4 years.
You're co-chair in the role with Marika Yonas, who is, you know, a lifelong advocate and activist in First Nations affairs. What does it mean for you to work with Marika?
It's amazing. So Mariki and I did a lot of work last term. She used to be head of policy, and we had the task of structuring up the relationship with our Aboriginal community-controlled organisation. So we made a ACCO governance mechanism together with the ACCOs, and we built a really close working relationship, and I couldn't imagine doing the job with anyone else, and, yeah, we get along really well.
If there was something that you wanted non-Indigenous Victorians to know about treaty, what would be the elevator pitch to them? What would be the thing that you would want them to know about this process?
I think,
and it is a process because it's ongoing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's ongoing. I think what comes to mind for me is treaty is about resetting the relationship. For the last 200 years, what we've been doing hasn't been working. We can all be honest and say that out loud. And I think that's probably the main thing. But also, we're the first state in this country to have a treaty with its first peoples. Mm. We're one of the last Commonwealth countries to treaty with its first peoples. The UN Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Rights, and it's the most advanced modern treaty that he's seen across the world. So to me, that's something that all Victorians should be proud of, and we should be walking with a skip in our step with that information behind us.
Yeah, it's something that is unique in this country. For such a long time, we were the only Commonwealth country that didn't have a treaty with First Nations people. This is now the first one in Australia, and you know, hopefully, all things being equal, it won't be the last. I think it's also important for people to know that there's a statewide treaty, and that there will be a number of treaties that either fall out of that or are completely separate to that. Do you want to just talk us through what that looks like?
Yeah, so the statewide treaty is about political reform and, you know, justice, health, housing and so on. But the first round of members in the treaty negotiation framework, through their wisdom, decided that there should be two types of treaties. So there's the traditional owner treaties as well, which there's a process to go for as traditional owner groups to get to the table, but they'll cover things like land, waters and what's important to them. And every mob will be able to negotiate their own treaty because, as we know, Jarrah's treaty will be very different to Gunai Kurnai's treaty down on the coast in Gippsland, because our country's different, our people are different and our needs are different. So
Before I let you go to go on to the steps of Parliament, we are living in a very politically tumultuous time. Coalition opposition in this state has declared that they will tear up the treaty process within their first 100 days of governance. What is it like sort of navigating those waters at this particular moment in time, in probably the most politically charged time of our lifetimes, I would suggest.
Yeah, it's disappointing, but for me, I'm about building relationships, and my hopes are that treaties stay above party politics, and I'm looking forward to catching up with Jess Wilson and having that yarn and see where the alignment is on the work that we want to do in terms of economic empowerment and the international investment that we could bring into Victoria through our cultural governance. And I think, yeah, there's also an alignment there in terms of Ninga Nangawada, our accountability mechanism. How do we save the state money through that process as well? So we'll be catching up in the next few weeks, and I'm keen to yarn and build that relationship and see where it goes.
You walk in the footsteps of many a great person. You mentioned Sir Pastor Doug Nicholls just earlier. Tell us a little bit more about Sir Pastor Doug Nicholls before you head off and follow in his footsteps.
Yeah, well, he's my great-grandfather through my father, and, yeah, he advocated for a lot of our rights, and he went through a lot, you know, on the footy field and off the footy field, and he was the first Aboriginal governor in Adelaide, and he was knighted by the Queen, and he has so many achievements, and it's someone who I look up to personally, and my whole family looks up to as well. And to think that, he started a day of mourning, which has evolved into NAIDOC Week, is something special and close to my heart as well.
Well, Jaron, I'm sure he'd be very proud of you. Thanks so much for coming in and speaking to us about all things NAIDOC, all things treaty. Thank you for everything you're doing, and best of luck with it all.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
50 Years of Deadly on ABC Radio.
I'm Stephen Page. I'm a Mananjali Noonuckle man from southeast Queensland. This year's theme for NAIDOC Week is 50 Years of Deadly. I'm a man of optimism, and that's why I use storytelling, and that's why I love being in the arts, and I bless the spirit God for putting me there because, you know, being in that position and creating stories and bringing contemporary and traditions together and the continuation of that, like I always have said, art is medicine, and especially in First Nations artistic kinship system and storytelling, it's a big part of our lives. I just reflect. I can reflect all the great moments in life, all those great pushes from our cultural leaders before us and the stance that they have made to maintain our existence in this landscape. Happy NAIDOC Week, all my brothers and sisters.
NAIDOC Week, 50 Years of Deadly.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
Now we're moving on to our second guest. We are talking all things NAIDOC here in the Conversation Hour. My name is Daniel James. But we're going to move to Lynette Riley AO, who is a Wurundjeri Gamilaroi woman and co-chair of the NAIDOC committee. She knows what she doesn't know about NAIDOC isn't worth knowing. So that's the reason we have her on the line right now. NAIDOC actually stands for National Aborigines and Islanders Day of Observance. And I think observance is such an important word in this. It's part celebration, it's part commemoration, it's part joy, it's a part healing. Why should I bang on it anymore? Let's talk to Professor Lynette Riley, who was co-chair of the National NAIDOC Committee and has spent more than four decades working in Aboriginal education. And I'm very, very pleased to say that she is on the line now. Auntie Lynette, welcome to the Conversation Hour.
Well, thank you very much, Daniel. And after that introduction, I hope I'll live up to it.
Well, I'm asking everyone that comes on the show today, I mean, the theme this year is 50 Years of Deadly. What does the term deadly mean to you?
Deadly for us means that you're amazing, you're wonderful, you're excellent. And that's actually why we chose that as part of our theme this year. Because one of the key things that our old fellas wanted to do was to make sure the rest of the world was aware of our excellence and the amazing things that come from our people, our culture, our knowledges, and our history. And, yeah, we've been here for 65,000 years plus, but let's at least celebrate the last 50 years.
Yeah, 50 years is just a drop in the ocean in the history of this country. You're the co-chair of the National NAIDOC Committee. Can you just give us an understanding of how much effort goes into organising NAIDOC every year?
Oh, gosh. We finish one NAIDOC. We have to give ourselves a month break and then we start planning for the next year because we've got to get a theme organised. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into, well, Once we've got the theme organised, then we've got to publicise it, then we've got to get, advertising for the posters based on the themes, et cetera, et cetera. And the venue that has been selected as the host city for the following year, all that work has to start immediately. Otherwise, we don't get everything in place.
I would imagine there would be some fairly robust discussions when it comes to deciding on things like the theme and venues. I mean, how tumultuous do things get when you're in the planning process for something like this?
Well, actually, it's not too bad. One of the things that we look at is what are the key issues and themes at that particular time. And I remember when we were actually looking at the theme that eventuated in being Because of Her We Can, we just started discussing what the theme might be. And then one of our members, who was the co-chair at the time, Anne Martin, had just finished having a talk with a daughter.
Right.
And she hadn't been well. And so we were, how is she going? Is everything all right? And then she started talking about all the amazing things that her daughter was doing. And then we all started talking about all the amazing women in our family. And we all just looked at one another and went, well, that's our theme. And that's how, sometimes it's just a yarn.
And sometimes it just comes to you. I mean,
yeah,
that's the beautiful thing about it. NAIDOC has its genesis really in protest and resistance. And a lot of people see the evolution of NAIDOC stemming right back to the day of mourning in 1938 with William Cooper and, of course, people like Sir Pastor Doug Nicholls and various other luminaries. What can you tell us about the through line from that moment to this?
I think that for all of the people that are on the committee, that's actually our grounding, the foundation for us. And we always keep that in our minds about what it was that our old fellas wanted. And then we use that to ground us in planning where we want to head. Mm. So, things like making sure that part of what we do is also education for the wider community. Hence, now we're developing the curriculum documents that are available through ABC website and also the NAIDOC website. And this year is particularly good. I'm really proud of this year. And then also to make sure that we do have a really national focus.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're very proud of NAIDOC operating at the local and state level and all of the amazing people that are celebrated. But what we're trying to do at the federal level is recognise that excellence of what people are doing nationally to create change for our people. And that's something that we carry through. So we're always, always conscious, and I feel like the old fellas are standing right behind me on my shoulders and saying all the time, now don't forget to do this. And that's what we carry forward in us, because for us it's the honour of carrying that process forward.
There's so many things I could speak to you about, Aunt. I mean, you spent your life dedicated to improving the education of our people and improving education knowledge institutions themselves. But just because we're running a little bit behind time here, I might just ask you and finish with this question. What do you think or hope that the next 50 years of NAIDOC will become?
I think it's the different fights being recognised for each nation and clan groups. But I think that there are some commonalities, and one of those is recognition of our sovereignty in this country, and that actually does eventuate. And I look at the work of groups like in Victoria, and I'm in awe of what they've been able to achieve. And so I think that that's something that all of us are fighting for, and also to get adequate funding to make sure our languages are revitalised, so that we can develop really good resources and that we can have, you know, localised teaching of our various languages, because our language is our culture and our culture is our language. It's all tied in together. And if we can get those two things, I know it's going to be a lot of hard work. The referendum, which, you know, gave us the loud no vote, mm-hmm. just cemented in my head that there's more education to be done.
Well, Arnie Lilley-Rowley, thank you so much for speaking to us. Happy NAIDOC Week. I hope you get a bit of a rest after this, but thank you for joining us.
Very, very honoured to join you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
50 Years of Deadly on ABC Radio.
Yeah, my name's Victor Stevenson. I'm a Takalaka descendant from far north Queensland and in Australia here. Well, the theme, 50 Years of Deadly, I guess it's our current footprint, right? In the last 50 years. Obviously, it goes back way more than that. For thousands of years and what Aboriginal people have achieved on this continent, you know, one thing is living on it for thousands of years without destroying it. NAIDOC to me is obviously, you know, celebrating Aboriginal culture in this country, seeing everyone come together, celebrate who they are, their connections to the land, reconnect with each other, all the families reconnecting with each other. That's really important. But also showcasing that to the broader community too. But it really is about a celebration to acknowledge, you know, the First Peoples and the struggles and where we are today, and that it's a positive future. Happy NAIDOC Week out there for everybody, no matter who you are. It's a beautiful week to celebrate.
NAIDOC Week, 50 years of Deadly.
On 774 ABC Melbourne.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Daniel James.
It's true, the very good but foolish people here at ABC Melbourne have given me a microphone for an hour, so that's what you've been putting up with. We're going to continue on with the program. We're going to continue speaking with deadly people about deadly things. And so to our next guest, Dr. Leslie Heffling is a nominee for NAIDOC Person of the Year. She's a finalist in that category. She has spent years and years and years, decades, in fact, working across Aboriginal health, well-being, education, cultural safety, and community leadership. She is on the line now to speak to us about NAIDOC, what the being a finalist in this award category means for her. Lana Leslie, thank you so much for joining us.
Yama Daniel, and happy NAIDOC to you.
Happy NAIDOC to you. It's very good to hear your voice. First of all, congratulations. How are you sitting with this nomination in a year where NAIDOC is marking 50 years of Deadly?
Oh, my gosh. It's pretty overwhelming. When I first got the call that I was a finalist, I just couldn't believe it. I actually had a few tears. I was just so overwhelmed. You just keep chipping away at your work, you know, for days, years, decades, and you don't expect sort of these sort of, you know, nominations. So I guess it was more so a feeling of being overwhelmed, and I, you know, for a moment there, I thought it was one of my friends giving me a prank call. but yeah, look, it was a definite feeling of being overwhelmed.
You've worked in a lot of areas, like I said, across Aboriginal health, well-being, but you're predominantly working in cultural safety and community leadership. What can you tell us about some of your work in that particular sphere?
Thank you. Well, I feel like I've been working in cultural safety like forever because it is about, you know, making environments more welcoming to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, because we have, you know, there's so much racism in Australia, and there has been since the invasion and colonisation of Australia. It still, you know, is around today. And so it's about making those spaces and doing what you can have people more comfortable in environments. I mean, you only have to look in the 1970s with the Redfern AMS and how that started off. And that started off because there was so much racism in health. And you know, to their credit, back in the 1970s, Redfern AMS kicked off a special service for Aboriginal people to go in to feel safe. So I teach about cultural safety, but it's also connected to, you know, like racism, anti-racism, and educating people about the beautiful cultures that are here in Australia, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures, because there are so many. And, oh, isn't it fantastic that we're celebrating this 50 years of NAIDOC?
And it's wonderful. Yeah, it's amazing. It's an amazing achievement. It's like a drop in the ocean in terms of how long this continent's been populated by First Nations people. But 50 years is an amazing effort. I just want to speak to you a little bit about your work and about your philosophies when it comes to this. Your PhD is in Aboriginal health and well-being.
Yes.
We often think of well-being when it relates to the individual. What does it mean when we talk about it as part of a collective, as part of a cultural thing for Aboriginal people, not just the individual?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So, you know, health is, it's just not a biomedical sort of approach to health. It's really holistic approach to health. And so if you think about, you know, someone's social and emotional well-being, it's not just about one aspect. There are other aspects to health when it comes to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. There is cultural well-being, as an example, you know, connecting to country and the health benefits from being on country, your own country, and being on other countries as well. There's connection to your mobs and to your family, your kinship systems, your you know, whatever local groups that you're involved in, the cultural activities that you're involved in, and it's about honouring, you know, the ancestors. Like, it's quite a holistic sort of way to look at health that is not just through the lens of, you know, the medicine sort of, you know, we just will fix you through medicine.
So it's kind of
spiritual well-being as
well.
Yeah,
it's about connection, isn't it? It's about connection to culture, connection to family, connection to land, and feeling like you're part of something bigger, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. And look, there's yarning with someone from Canada, like an Anishinaabe person from Canada, and they told me this particular term, which I'd never heard before. This was years ago. And they said that there's a blood memory, you know, with First Nations people of the world. And so we are connected through country, through the memory, through our blood, which I thought that was really beautiful. And, you know, I don't live on country myself. I live on Darugun Gunungurra country in the Upper Blue Mountains in west of Sydney. I'm a Gamilaroi woman, you know, so northwest New South Wales, Maureen, Coonabarabran, around that area. But you see, if you're not on country, country is still in you, you know, in your blood, in your heart, in your mind, in your soul. And the stories and those connections are what keeps it alive.
Lana, we've had some very deadly people on the program thus far, and each one of them I've asked them, what does actually deadly mean to you? Because it's something, it's kind of like curry. Curry means different things to different people. Yeah. What does the term deadly mean to you?
Oh, look, it's just deadly is just that word that it's a celebration, and it means, you know, fantastic, awesome, and that kind of thing. You know, I suppose when you think about deadly and this year's theme, you know, you can carve it up and think, okay, past, present, future, right? So if you think about the past, you know, we're carrying on that deadliness from all those, you know, from our ancestors, from our elders, the people that came before us that did all that hard work to enable us to be where we are today. And in the present, you know, we're doing what we can, you know, all the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, you know, to celebrate and to keep things going. And then we're laying down tracks for the future, for those young people that are here, and they're showing the leadership now, and they'll be taking that baton to move us into the next. So, you know, deadly is part of the continuum, I feel, you know, the continuum of all of that past, present and future. And we we are part of that. And it's not just Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, it's our allies.
Yeah.
You know, like we're all together
in this. Look, between you and me, I think that's probably the best definition of deadly we've had on this program so far. I don't want to blow your trumpet too much, but that's a pretty good...
I'll send you the invoice.
No wonder you are a finalist in this year's NAIDOC Person of the Year. When do you find out, Lana?
Well, being invited to the National NAIDOC Awards, which is on the 15th of August, what they used to do was they used to announce the winners during NAIDOC Week, but they've changed it this year.
Right, just to give you more stress and anxiety in your life.
Just to keep you hanging on, you know. But, my husband and I are flying up to Alice Springs for the 15th of August, and that's been a stress in itself in just trying to find what clothes to wear, right? Because I've never been to a fancy ball before. But
I'm on there now in a three-piece tuxedo because I want to, not only honour NAIDOC Week but honour these precious airwaves. Lana, we've got to keep trucking because we've got to speak to another finalist.
Awesome.
But Dr. Lana Leslie Heffling, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, and thanks for all that you do in the ABC. Appreciate it.
No worries. There's lots of wonderful text coming in, which I'm very impressed by because I assume that it's so cold that people can't feel their fingers right now. So I appreciate everyone going to the extra effort of sending through some really quite touching text. So thank you for that. We are going to go speak to our final guest this conversation hour, and our guest is Timmy Duggan OAM, the founder of Hoops for Health. He's been nominated for Person of the Year as a NAIDOC finalist. He is the first person from the Northern Territory to play in the NBL for the Gold Coast Rollers in 1996 and the Cairns Taipans in 1999. Hoops for Health uses basketball and holistic well-being to strengthen young people and communities, especially in remote communities. He describes the founding and sustaining of Hoops for Health as his biggest achievement, which is something because he has been inducted into the NT Sports Hall of Champions in 2024. I'm very pleased to say that Timmy is on the line with us now. Timmy, hello.
Yeah, hello, Daniel.
How are you? Congratulations on being named as a finalist.
Yeah. No, thanks for that. It's an honour, and just to be nominated and recognised. So, going to be a good night in Alice Springs in a few weeks.
Where are we? Where are you at the moment? Where are we speaking to you from?
I'm based on Larrakia Country in Darwin, and this is where my home is. I'm born and bred here. And, just came from the local NAIDOC March. Turnout there this morning as well.
Tell us a little bit about Hoops for Health. Where did that idea generate itself from?
Yeah, the actual concept came to my head when I was sitting in I went away to Sydney as a teenager for basketball. But then I got a traineeship at the Aboriginal Medical Service in Redfern, and I was sitting in a demandable there, listening to these leaders like Naomi Mayers and Dulcie Flowers in the health workers course, and actually doing a course around health work. And then at the time, I'm chasing a bit of a basketball dream.
Yep.
So I thought, hey, what if I combine this health messaging and the plight of our people with my love of basketball, so hence the name Hoops for Health.
Genius.
That concept and idea was in my head for about 6 years, and I wrote it down around what the idea, what the program would look like, and addressing a few of the issues, and just using that basketball as a bit of a vehicle to keep it ticking along.
And so
it wasn't until 2001 when I officially launched it.
So it's not just about getting kids together and running through basketball drills and the like. It's something that's far more holistic than that. Would that be correct?
It's far more. It's backed by really good evidence and science, namely from a guy named Dr. Bruce Perry, his neurosequential model. So we've connected the brain to sport and a term called healing-centered sport. And then also our First Nations knowledges and experiences. So we've blended both, and that forms what we call our model at Hoops for Health. And there's a few concepts that make it up. But namely, it's in the last 5 or 6 years, it's connecting the brain to sport and the good science behind it around the traumas that our mob have been through, and but the ability to build how our brain can build resilience, and especially for these young kids that have, you know, may have been in a little trouble or in the youth detention center where we do a lot of work, and using this neurosequential model in that.
It's a program that works on several different levels. I mean, I guess it's a diversionary program as much as anything else.
We like to think of it more of a social and emotional well-being program.
Yep.
We've had another program on there called Hoops for Wealth, which is our financial well-being program. And same thing, it connects the brain to what we do. And also programs in prison as well, and also far-reaching programs out at remote communities across northern and central Australia. So we're capturing a lot of our mob in places where they might not normally get some service.
It's tremendous work that you do, Timmy. I mean, you've said that this is the honour of your life. What will potentially being named NAIDOC Person of the Year mean? I mean, I guess it's a reflection of this work.
Yeah, look, in terms of the honour of my life, I think my kids and my family first.
That's very diplomatic of you to say, Timmy.
But look, I say it, there's all nominees across all categories, including the one that I'm nominated in, have all done fantastic achievements, and I reckon they've all done it using limited resources. But they still do it because of their obligation to the community. And I think that's really important. If you genuinely want to make change or genuinely doing stuff for our people in our community, it has to come from a sense of, you know, where you've actually come from. And it's a big honour to be nominated. Yeah, and I thank, you know, the nominating committee for this opportunity, and it gives you a chance to talk about, you know, your organisations and the work that you do around the country as well. So,
I thank you for your work, Timmy. I know your family must be tremendously proud of you, and your community must be proud of you. And best of luck with the award. If you don't get it, you're still deadly.
No worries. Yeah, no, we all got a lot of deadly mob out there. So, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Timmy.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you for joining me on the Conversation Hour today. You can listen to us again by finding the Conversation Hour on the ABC Listen app. And, of course, you can write to us if you have any suggestions or stories we should cover. Write to conversationshour@abc.net.au. Mira Guerin will be back in the chair next week doing a fantastic job. But thank you for your company today. Thank you to everyone that came on. Happy NAIDOC to everyone.